Saga Egmont presents The Wild Cry of Love by Barbara Cartland. Read by Sarah Powell. Author's note. The Camargue lies on the coast between the Languedoc-Roussillon and Provence in France. Often described as its own little country, almost 90% of the 360 square mile delta is protected as a national park, home to dozens of unique species of flora and fauna, animals and birds, which attract thousands of visitors a year. When I visited in 1975, I was entranced and captivated by its beauty, but distressed, as were so many other people back then, by the encroachment of the rice planters. At the time, the Camargue grew 800,000 hundredweight of rice annually, and this was increasing year by year. This caused predictions that the Camargue would totally disappear within 10 years, losing something unique and very wonderful. Luckily, this has not happened, and the area is still a realm of unspoilt nature, with salt steps, reed beds, lakes and pools with their flamingos, little cygnets, black bulls and white horses. In this novel, I have tried to convey the magic and mystery of this exquisite wilderness, which I believe to be part of the soul of France. Chapter 1, 1899.
"You cannot mean it, Beaupère," Valda exclaimed.
"I do mean it," the Comte de Marlimont replied. "Your mother and I have talked it over very carefully, Valda, and it really is time we considered your marriage."
Valda made an exasperated little sound, then said firmly,
"I have no intention, Beaupère, of agreeing to an arranged marriage with a Frenchman I have never seen, who is not in the least interested in me. I intend to marry for love."
Valda faced her stepfather as she spoke with a defiance that only succeeded in making her look even more attractive than usual. She was an exceedingly lovely girl, so it was not surprising that both her mother and stepfather were much concerned for her future. Besides the fact that Valda had the deep red hair beloved of the Viennese, she had blue eyes, which were typically English, and to frame them, dark lashes that her father had always averred were owed to some Irish ancestor. One thing was quite certain, the Comte thought as he looked at her. She certainly did not look French, and, as he already knew, the Frenchmen who had seen her when they were in Paris had been fulsome in their compliments. But if nature had not been generous enough in endowing Valda with a beautiful face, a slim, graceful body, and an intelligent mind, she was also extremely wealthy. Her father had left a very great fortune to his only child, and the Comte, who was an extremely conscientious man, was not unnaturally worried about his stepdaughter's future. "You know as well as I do, Valda," he said, "that marriages in France are arranged."
"Then I will not accept a French husband,"
Valda asserted sharply.
"And do not imagine that things are very different in England," the Comte continued, as if she had not spoken. "An English heiress like yourself is always married off to a distinguished aristocrat who is finding it difficult to keep up his estates."
"Surely there must be some country in the world where love is considered important," Valda asked.
There was something wistful in the question, and the Comte's eyes softened as he replied,
"Love is what everyone seeks, Valda. In most cases, men and women who enjoy the same tastes and share the same interests find in their marriage a companionship which deepens into love."
"You fell in love with my mamma," Valda pointed out.
"That is true," the Comte answered. "But she was a widow, and not a girl of 18 who, quite frankly, is incapable of knowing her own mind."
"Why should you think that?"
Valda asked, and now the defiance was back in her voice. The Comte smiled.
"You have been brought up very strictly," he said, "and although you have travelled a certain amount, you have never done anything on your own."
"That is not my fault," Valda retorted.
"I am not suggesting it is a fault," the Comte replied. "In fact, I believe it to have been eminently sensible. But the fact remains that you have never chosen a gown without the help of your mother. You would have no idea of how to travel from here to Paris without a courier. Do you really imagine, therefore, that you are capable of choosing wisely the man to whom you will be married for the rest of your life?"
"If I leave the choice to you, how can you possibly know if we will be suited to each other when we are together?" Valda asked. "Suppose I conceived a violent hatred for him."
"In which case I would obviously not make you marry him."